Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
All right. Hello, everyone. We are doing a little Patreon Q&A for Forgive Me. I'm Adam Raymunda. I am the sound designer and host of the show. And then I've got Jack. Why don't you go ahead and intro yourself and then we'll pass things along.
Sure. Sounds good. Hi, I'm Jack Marone. I am one of the co-creators and writers for Forgive Me. Bob.
I'm Bob Raymunda. I am the other co-creator and writer for Forgive Me. How about Casey? Who are you, pal?
Hey, everyone. This is Casey Callahan, the voice of Father Ben chiming in. And back to you, Adam.
Oh, look at that. Look at us. We're real pros over here. Seasoned pros at this round table format here. So we collected some different questions from folks from Twitter and some from Patreon. And so the first one coming in is for Jack from our pal TH Ponders, another lovely podcaster. Where did the idea for blending the seemingly dour subject of confession with the sitcom format? Where did it come from?
I mean, my Catholic upbringing, I would say more than anything, is probably where it came from. But it's funny. I mean, thinking about this question, which is a great one, is I don't really think of confession as dour. I think of it as deeply weird, for sure. But I just remember sitting on the subway during a time when Bob and I were working together at this company in Brooklyn and having the thought that confession is such a funny context for storytelling, and it would really make for, I don't know, a good piece of content. I'm not even sure if initially I'd thought of it in the audio format, but it played so well into that format. But I know I'd thought about my Catholic upbringing a lot as I grew older and farther from it, and that there were so many like idiosyncrasies and funny moments that would come out of like my youth in the church, and they were just like worth the people that you would encounter were worth talking about, and there's really no better way to have people talk about themselves than make them confess stuff. So yeah, I mean, I remember having that thought and then throwing that thought at Bob like in the middle of a workday on like a Thursday one time years ago.
I actually remember Bob telling me about the show idea maybe 2016. You know, we were making another podcast at the time, and Bob was like, this is a perfect setting for a podcast. And we may or may not have been with Josh Rubino at the time as well, which I'm pretty sure that we were. We maybe recording something for Breadcrumbs, right?
We were working on Breadcrumbs. We were at your old practice space in Yonkers at that big giant building. Mm-hmm. And we were just laughing over some dumb stuff we had done and trying to brainstorm, like, what's the way that we can take this really fun thing that we're doing with Josh in these little bite-sized 5 to 10 minute pieces and come up with, like, a season-long show that we really wanted. And the thing is that was at a time where it was after Jack had pitched the idea, and like at least a year or so later, and we were sort of coming to it in a way where we were like paying attention to all the other podcasts going on in the space, and also really obsessed with Twin Peaks. And so, like, the way we would have done it if we had done it without Jack was definitely a very different sort of show. It would have been some, like, small town murder mystery, the, you know, priest gets the confession of the killer sort of thing. Like, it would have been a very different show, and I'm really glad that we didn't make it. Yeah. I'm glad that we didn't make it, because it never felt right to do without you, Jack. And so I just sort of kept it back burner in my mind, because I knew that I loved it, but didn't want to approach it until, you know, we could do it together.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks for doing that. I feel like this story is the one where it's like, I don't know, like when you're engaged and people have ask you how you met a lot. Like I sort of feel like it's the story of our, like, this is our love story, the four of us that we
It kind of is.
Yeah.
So we know that just from that answer that Jack has given confession, but we actually have another question from Ella Watts. Have any of the rest of us given confession before?
I definitely have. We grew up Catholic, but like less practicing than Jack did. We definitely went, you know, some Sundays, but not that regularly. We did go to church school growing up, so I remember doing it then. The most visceral confession experience that I remember is definitely story fodder that we used for the season, but we aged up the memory. When I was a kid, I stole a Garfield-shaped staple remover for my second grade teacher, Mrs. Watkins, and because my mom wouldn't buy it for her and I really wanted to give it to her, I promptly forgot that I had done it, did not give her the gift. And when I was crying over a lost Lego, my mom was trying to help me find it. She looked in my jacket pocket and she found that staple remover and she was furious. And again, our mother is not a Catholic person. She is not a believer. She just didn't know what to do with me, and she was mortified, and she it was a pronged approach. She took me first to the pharmacy where I stole it from, made me hand it back to the cashier and apologize to them verbally as a, you know, I was second grade, was that 8-9 years old, and then went straight to the church. And I remember it being really weird too, because it was like 7 o'clock on a Wednesday, and both of our parents were there, which was never a thing that happened because they were divorced. And also, like, all the lights were off in the church except the lights in the very front. And the priest and I just sat in the last pew. We didn't go into the confession booth or anything, but I had to confess to him right there. Yeah, definitely. It was, I will never forget that moment. And there were definitely a few other confessions in my life, but that's the one that made it into the show. Kind of.
Imagine being that drugstore clerk or whoever it was, you know, that's like has to take that stapler back and is like, all right, kid, sure. Yeah. Like, this was really going to crush the business that I certainly do not run.
Well, I mean, to be fair, that pharmacy did close not long after and was never open again. So I think that I might have had something to do with it. I am responsible for the downfall of the farmhouse.
The lessons of Margaret are true.
Truly.
Wow.
Truly.
I just, quickly for me, I'll just say, listen to Code Blue.
Yeah, autobiographical.
Just deeply, only a hair. Profoundly.
For myself, I recall doing it, but it was mainly for, in preparation for confirmation. Which was something that we had to do.
Yeah, they really try to get all the sacraments out in one go.
They do.
It's a combo deal.
Yeah, I don't really have any specific memories for it other than witnessing the fact that Bob, like, I remember being toted around on that day that Bob had to confess. Casey, how about yourself?
Yeah, I guess that makes me the odd man out. So as the one of the four of us with a non-Catholic upbringing, yeah, the Methodist faith was the church that I attended growing up, and confession not a part of that practice. I don't know if that's the right word, but yeah, the closest I've ever come to giving confession would probably be when I was asked to reflect in front of the congregation on my experience as a... So there's one surprisingly harrowing summer as a Methodist summer camp counselor, an experience I was probably very ill-suited for, but still managed to turn into an interesting sermon of sorts about believing in oneself and being willing to, you know, take a chance and throw yourself into the unknown and have faith, shall we? But yeah, that's the closest I've ever come to confession, despite a father and my father's entire side of the family very much grew up Catholic, but he jumped ship, so to speak, to the our local Methodist church, and that was my religious upbringing.
I'm gonna keep in mind the religious summer camp thing and then try to fish ideas out.
Well, trust me, the amount of stories that came out of a single summer are pretty intense. So yeah, we'll talk shop.
Jack's got big camp counselor energy. That was like the first thing you did after we graduated was went right to
it was
being a camp counselor. I remember.
Mm-hmm. It was, yeah.
Well, Jack, we actually have another question for you. Father Clem became a major part of Father Ben's story this year. Can you tell us a little bit about creating the character and why it was so important that he be introduced into the show?
Yeah, I love Father Clem so much. It makes me very happy. Clem is my grandmother's maiden name. I will tell you that's where that name comes from, the German Clem family that is part of my heritage. There's a lot of, especially in the first season, a lot of little names that I almost put in as placeholders that became the names of characters that are just people in my life, which is very fun for me now. But Clem was Marjorie Clem, my grandma, rest in peace. Margaret really, in a lot of ways, was based to some degree on my grandma, but Clem too, I really, you know, I think initially really wanted to make sure Clem stayed with the show, not knowing exactly that he would become like a nihilist goof case. I don't know what words to use to describe him necessarily. He's a little bit wilder than I think I ever initially imagined, but I really like, and this is really, I think, the core of that first episode of the podcast, but I think is like true when you look at our show in general. I really like the generational divide with how people experience religion and just the different ways in which people interact with those traditions. In particular, one of the things I really have found to be an interesting truth, it's obviously not universal, religion's different for everyone, but there are a lot of people from stories that I've heard and just talking to people. And I think that this transcends just Catholicism and is true in a lot of different religions, but people who are very devout, it being a little bit more about the structure of that devoutness than it necessarily is about like a strong belief in God even. And it's really more about the experience of being part of this tradition. And I really like Margaret, and I kind of wanted Clem to fill this role too, of someone who could kind of map out these rules while maybe being a little bit more flippant about religion in general. And I also really like that he can kind of be this like guide for Ben through this weird town, this nameless screwball town that we put Ben into. But yeah, I know I felt very strongly about Clem being a part of the show from day one. I know Bob, I don't know if you wanted, I know you had other opinions.
Well, I wanted
not to put
no,
you on blast.
I wanted to kill Clem. I wanted to kill Clem, and I had a very like, yeah, I'm the dark one. I make everything depressing. That's always the big joke in our
your
other
brand.
Show too. That's my brand. I write the sad
I think you're
episodes.
The heart. You're the heart, Bob. You're the heart of the show.
I'm the sad
which
boy
is where you
for
bleed.
Sure. But no, I had honestly a much more in my mind at the time what I thought was like logical reasoning, because in my head it was like, you know, yeah, season one, we've got six episodes, but we could already feel going into making the show that there was a lot of legs to it. There were a lot of stories that we could tell in this world. And so my biggest concern with keeping Ben around, or Clem around, I'm sorry, was in fact keeping Ben around. Like, why wouldn't, if Clem were to recover, why wouldn't Clem come back, take his congregation back, and Ben go on his way? And of course, the show could continue to exist. But we had such a core interest in this character of Ben that I wasn't sure how we would handle that. And again, like you said, you know, we did not plan for him to be this nihilist screwball Muppet that he became. But I will remember the thing that convinced me was you saying that an episode you had in mind, which is what turned out to be our season two finale, which is Ben in confession. It was so important to you from the very beginning, before we had written one script, that was it. Because that was when I was trying to convince you that he should die. And you said, no, like, we need someone for Ben to confess to. We need someone for Ben to get guidance from. And that idea seemed so, like, just like rife with potential that I was sold, and I, you know, I backed off all my, like, we got to kill this guy energy, and we leaned into it. I'm so glad we have, because he's one of my favorite characters to write now. It's just such a joy to write Clem and Ben together. The two of you have such good chemistry together. It's, mm-hmm. it's infectious.
So true.
This episode is brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. By becoming a patron, you can get access to an ad-free version of this episode, as well as all of our other episodes. Also, we've got director's notes for each episode, music from the show, and more. Become a patron over at patreon.com/roguedialogue.
Hi. I'm Yusuf Dahl, and when I was 18, I was convicted of selling drugs. For the past 3 years, I've had difficulty finding housing because it is legal in the United States to discriminate against individuals that have a past drug distribution conviction on their record for life. It doesn't matter if it was a hard drug like heroin or a drug that's now legal or partially legal in many states across the country, like marijuana. The Thurman Amendment was introduced to the Fair Housing Act in 1988 by segregationist Strom Thurmond, and it's since been used to deny housing to all people. But because people of color are disproportionately jailed for drug charges, we are affected more. My goal is to overturn this amendment to start an end to housing discrimination that unfairly targets people of color. If you would like to join this movement, please visit ThurmanAmendment.org to learn more.
A message from the Fable and Folly Network. Looking to get out of the ads and back to the story? Fable and Folly Plus is a new way to support the creators you love. The podcast you're listening to right now and more than 60 others can be heard ad-free for as little as $4 a month by visiting fableandfolly.com/plus. And now, you'll start to see Fable and Folly Network shows are offering bonus content to all existing and new supporters. Find exclusive new episodes from shows like Civilized and Realms of Peril and Glory. Fable and Folly Plus. Sign up today at fableandfolly.com/plus.
I've got another one for Jack from Ponders here. Seeing that no one on the team is a member of the clergy,
false.
Where have you drawn inspiration for the character of Ben? Mm-hmm. And I would actually say that, like, some of this could maybe be directed towards Casey as well, just like bringing that sort of sure. energy into the character once we've got the scripts to you, Casey.
So first off, Bob and Adam are both ordained, not in the Catholic Church, but I do think it's important to note that we do have members of the Universal Life Church who are both on this show, as well as my wife, who is also a member of the Mary, your friends want you to marry them church. Mm-hmm. But that aside, I think, you know, one, Ben is a person who's trying way too hard and trying to be a good person and failing a lot. And that is, I think, the identity of anybody who was raised Catholic. I know it's, I definitely put a lot of myself in sort of his demeanor. I think when I think about like who he is interacting with people, there was I really filtered a lot of my personal anxiety into the role, for sure. But I would say when it comes to clergy, without naming names, I did grow up, as we've mentioned a few different times, in a pretty involved family when it came to the Catholic Church. I went to the cathedral in Rochester, and at the time, it's not really that way anymore as much, but it was for Catholicism a really progressive diocese, the Diocese of Rochester at the time. And there were a handful of priests that I ended up spending a good amount of time with in like a Catholic youth context, who remind me a lot of Father Ben, in that they want to be like fully progressive people, but are anchored by the regressive, reductive, and arguably evil organization that they participate in. I would say, yeah, it's a mix of, I think, the human elements, you know, my own lived experience, and then some of the more dogmatic parts of Ben's identity come from some priests that I knew growing up. Casey, I don't know about you.
I'm trying to figure out how to answer this question without revealing some uncomfortable truths about me, and I don't think there's any way about it.
So you don't want to confess anything?
Well, you know, not with the public listening. If you've got a booth handy
fair enough.
Actually ordained, I'll give it a shot. But so despite religion not being an enormous part of my life, I think there's still a bit of universality in, you know, the role of being a priest that I think is also very true about my personality. And it's so, as anyone who is the, you know, the leader of a parish, you know, you are, for all intents and purposes, a conduit for the word of God. And, you know, for us who aren't fortunate enough to be able to communicate with God themselves, we have to rely on, you know, what this person is saying. And in order to succeed in that role, that person has to like really believe that their interpretation of how God wants us to behave is sacrosanct. Like, they have to believe that what they're saying is how people should live their lives. And for good or for ill, I am one of those people who, gosh darn it, how I view the world is the right way to see things. Anyone else who disagrees with me, you are wrong. But I also believe that, if I could just talk to them for 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 3 hours when they can't escape, I'm sure I can convince them to see my way of thinking. And it's the well-meaning... I might get myself in a little bit of hot water with this, but I think there's a well-meaning sort of arrogance for someone to think that they have the authority to, you know, speak on behalf of God.
So what you're saying is you think priests are self-righteous. I feel like you think that's a bigger dig than it might be.
Listen, I try not... I am very much making an effort not to impugn a very well-meaning swath of the human populace. But yes,
what I like is that is also very Father Ben, what you're doing right now, which would be to like be very just, aware of this.
We're summing up a lot.
It's great.
I think there's a reason why I mean, if you want to get right down to it, the reason I probably connect well with Ben is because the way he was envisioned when you guys put him to paper just happens to be very much ways that I live my own life. And so if we're talking about inspiration for Ben, well, for good or for ill, it wouldn't be a far-flung alternate universe for me to have followed in his footsteps, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why this show works in a lot of ways, is that it's like everybody is bringing themselves into the show in a way that like is palpable when you hear, you know, when you hear it come together, you know, it's like we you can feel it in there, and I love it.
Speaking of bringing yourself into the show, I think we now have a couple questions for you, Adam.
Oh, look at that.
So The sound design and scoring of Forgive Me bring a lot of color to a series that might otherwise fall into the trap of being fairly one-dimensional conversations. How do you decide when and how to use these tools when producing each episode?
A lot of it is trying to decide, like, how we can punctuate certain moments. And I think when we first had the scripts, I had kind of intended it to be like more of, okay, two people sitting in one place, let's make this show, frankly, like, easier to produce than some of the other things that we've made, right? But then, you know, hearing it and bringing all of the pieces together, there was other things that we could potentially explore by bringing in some sort of diegetic sound or things that people would hear in the situations that are being described, like, you know, Margaret going through the store and pushing the shopping cart, or just kind of punctuating some of the more emotional bits with music. The like first piece of music that I think I actually wrote for the show was when Tom is actually, like, at the end of the second episode, sort of Tom's little sort of, you know, kind of coming to grips with, like, okay, like, hearing Father Ben's sort of advice and the things that he needs to go do, and sort of finding this sort of sentimental kind of music that we could use there to kind of, like, really bring that home. And then also one thing that we were sort of trying to almost, like, not fully dive into was, you know, getting into the prayers that they're saying at the end, or sort of the things that they're sort of the you know, the repetition and the ritual that might be normally in confession. So using music at the end of those was a way for us to kind of bridge the gap of
not making people listen to 45 full seconds of praying.
And it's almost just like a way for us to kind of like let that reflection happen for the characters, mm-hmm. rather than just where it may not be, maybe like as relatable, you know, for people who may not be of, you know, this type of faith, right?
Yeah.
I think that's it. And then, and the show also does have some pretty different feelings to it, where there's a lot of sort of heart and emotion and then zaniness. And just, I think I've kind of, I don't really, there's not one necessary, like, one specific, like, identity or sound identity for the show. An episode like Clara's episodes or Steve's episode is like a full 180, you know, with like big orchestration to like match their over the top persona that maybe they see themselves as in some way, compared to someone like, I don't know, Margaret, where we're getting this kind of like bouncy jaunty thing that's happening, or it just kind of depends on the mood or the emotion. We kind of float between these like bouncy types of feelings or these like very over the top, you know, kind of zany things.
Yeah. And you also pull it back really well when it's like a really, I think, real emotional moment. You always do such a good job of balancing score and sound design, I think, deftly for the big moments, but I think especially in our like a Darla type episode where you really need to let the performance breathe a little bit. I adore the way that you sound design the show and score the show. So just wanted to make sure those heart episodes got a call out too. What were you going to say?
Oh, I don't even know now. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, here's another question from Ella Watts. Adam, did you ever record in an actual confession booth or go into one to consider the sound environment?
I have wanted to so bad, to get extremely nerdy. All I want to do is go in there with a microphone and record an impulse response, which is like a way that you could basically like do like a clap, or basically you pop a balloon. You basically make a big noise and then you get like you capture the actual reverb of a sound, because it like you're basically recording the
balancing for room tone.
Essentially, yeah, that's essentially what you're doing is like that's getting cool. these impulse responses. And like, all I want to do is go record one in an actual, like, to get a proper church sound, like, of the size that we're in, and then a proper one for the confessional. The confessional is something that is like this kind of claustrophobic type of sound for me, where there is usually some kind of, with intent, some kind of dampening, right, to keep things private. So I've thought a lot about it and wish that I could, but have not yet. Maybe one day.
Cool.
I've got a question for Casey here.
Oh boy.
And that's, you know, we talk a lot about Ben's journey, but with the general concept of the show, his story is often on the back burner because of the nature of the fact that other people are confessing to him. How do you try to bring that emotional journey into those moments where he isn't the centerpiece of an episode? How do you try to access that part of that character and make sure that it's consistent and true to what you know he's going through, even if the audience doesn't?
Well, you set me up to give a humdinger of an answer and just really, really talk about my process and the art I bring to my craft. But I gotta tell you, Bob, much like Ben is still rather oblivious to the journey he ought to be going through, to the point where Clem does everything but push him through the door in the final episode, and Ben still doesn't see what's going on. Casey was similarly pretty oblivious to Ben's emotional arc over the course of the season thus far, to the point where when we had my first opportunity to step into the writer's room and you and Jack were talking about, you know, this is the arc we see for season three, and we really want to build upon Ben's journey in two, and, you know, all these things he did. And I was sitting there, I was probably like nodding, looking like I was sagely absorbing all this information. And internally, I was very much going, oh crap, I didn't even notice that. Yeah, that was great. That totally happened in season two, didn't it? Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, wow, I should go listen to these episodes and see if I can pick up on that.
I love this answer.
I really wish, like, it speaks to perhaps like a bit why I'm lucky enough to have just auditioned for a role that I guess was more right for me than I even realized. But Ben doesn't he is starting to see at the end of end of season two that he needs to really start focusing less on fixing everyone else's problems and start figuring out what it is about himself that he needs to fix. And fortunately for my own apparent ignorance, that he was just completely unaware that he needed to like think about himself. And so Casey, the actor, very much unintentionally was following Ben's journey by not being aware of the journey he was on. I am very glad to say that thanks to where season two ended and what we've already talked about with season three, like both Casey and Ben are going to need to step up their game and really think about how the world is affecting us, and how, and if we're going to talk about in actor terms, like how the script is affecting us, and how, you know, not being just content with seeing the world as it comes at us, but really making sure we're taking time to understand what's being brought to us and what lessons we should be learning along the way. So sorry for that rather abrupt peek behind the curtain there, Bob, but that's my truth, and now I've shared it with all of you.
I go ahead, Adam.
Sorry. I was just gonna say I have to fight back just a hair against some of it, because you did, I think you just did, you asked like so many thoughtful questions when we like before we ever recorded. You know, you've understood and been inquisitive about Ben since the beginning. And so I think like through the first season, you approached so thoughtfully. And even though it took us a while to kind of get to recording the second season, like even if it wasn't
inherently at the top of mind when you were recording. It was like you were already sort of embodying this character in a way that like felt truthful. So I just had to put that out there.
I also want to say, I think like, you know, there's something to your point about like not necessarily seeing the growth in the macro in every moment, being and that being also very human. But I think you, one of the things that I love about you, and one of the reasons I was really passionate about making sure you were Ben, honestly, when we were auditioning folks, was the micro. I think one of the things that really, when I think about like, why is Ben Casey? Why is Casey Ben? And why is there so much character for Ben in the episodes where Ben is, whether he's hanging on for dear life with Clara or a little pissed off at Joe Walters, like, how does that growth appear? And I think one of the things that I've always felt really strongly about with Ben is that Ben feels really strongly about like trying his best and like doing his best and being good and being right about like being self-righteous a little bit, right? And Ben, I think even in the finale of season one, calls himself out for that a bit. You've always asked about that. You've always pushed on that. And you've always made sure that in the moment you were right tonally for who Ben is. So even if you don't see or recognize like macro growth, I think in a way as an actor, you're doing a phenomenal job by just making sure your tone perfect for who Ben is in that moment. And I even remember early season two, you really wanting to make sure that you were right on the money about like who Ben was in that moment and really framing on that for the start of that season. So, yeah, I think what you're saying is really honest and cool and like interesting to hear. But I think also like don't make it sound like you're not far away from who Ben is. I think when you try to wrap, like your head is wrapped around him. It's just always wrapped around on who he is today, which is awesome.
Yeah, I fully agree. I appreciate the self-deprecation, but I also don't want you to discount the incredible work that you have put in across the whole series. And I do think that makes sense, you know, especially because of the way that we produce. You know, we're not recording chronologically. We're recording based off everybody's availability, and we're kind of doing things all over the place. And so I understand the desire to sort of center yourself in the moment of what we're working on each day. But yeah, you have such a deft approach when you think about, you know, sometimes lines could be three or four words long, but we'll have full-on discussions about, you know, why are we choosing these words? Why is Ben saying this thing? And I think you're really keyed into that. And we really appreciate that. And like, I'll even say specifically into like the Christmas episode of season two, I'll think on that as well. That was a real new experience for all of us. We were trying to create a homily. We were trying to put Ben actually up on the pulpit in front of everyone. Jack touched on this really beautiful and really funny idea, but you put so much of yourself into improving that and expanding upon that and teasing it out, that touched so much on what was that season-long growth that we wouldn't have gotten that just from the words. So I don't want you to discount the work that you're doing here as well, because it's incredible work and I really appreciate you a lot.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you all so much. I think it's every actor's dream. Like, I wouldn't be saying this if you guys hadn't said it earlier, but I think it's every actor's dream to get to portray a character that actor has helped inspire. And you guys have been kind enough to say that what I brought to it in season one has helped you find its voice. And I think, I don't know, it feels like we may have drifted away from our belief in a higher power, but sometimes it really does feel like something brought us all together. Because I don't know,
baby.
Yeah, when I get to put on Ben's vestments, metaphorically speaking, they really feel they fit. I mean, I'm making a joke, but they just feel so comfortable. Like, I love playing Ben. I feel like I have a lot in common with him, and that's probably why I got cast, because you guys sensed something in me that that was very true to Ben. And I think, I don't know, that's why we've been able to make two great seasons so far and are excited to do more.
Well, thank you everybody for hanging out. And if you're watching this, we love you and appreciate you on Patreon. Thank you so much. And we've got a lot more in store for you. We've even got some sort of new episodes that are going to come out that are even before season three. So enjoy. We hope you enjoy those. And just thank you so much. And thanks for the questions. Thanks for hanging out. We love you.
Yeah, we could not do this without your love and support. We really, really appreciate you. This is incredible. You're who we do it for. And you make it worth mm-hmm. it. And we just can't thank you enough.
Completely.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.
Hi, folks. Let me see if I can sum up Midnight Burger in about 25 seconds.
Really big monster!
Zero irony.
Pardon me, Gloria. Might my husband and I have a word?
The radio is talking to me.
So this is how it ends. Eaten by wolves in space.
There's a pocket dimension in the deep freeze.
This is the stupidest dystopia we've ever been to.
What the hell is that?
Because you're having a cigarette in 415 million BC.
Where are we?
Space.
Can you narrow that down?
The bad part?
Ava.
Yeah, that didn't work at all.
At the nexus of all things, there is a diner. Look for Midnight Burger on your favorite podcasting app, or just go to weopenat6.com.